It's the second podcast that I'm doing, and I'm very excited and pleased to be speaking to this guest, someone that I've known for a couple of years now, and we actually met at a geoengineering march, I believe. And yeah, he's an inspiration to me personally, and he does a lot of work in the background which goes unnoticed, and he's now starting to bring some really good information, or he has been for a while, some really great information to the forefront. He's an author, he's a public speaker, all-round activist, and yeah, pleased to introduce Mark Devlin. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm good, Tony, and right back at you as well. Very pleased to be guesting on this podcast with you. I love the work you do, and I definitely respect everything that you represent, so great to be with you today.
Yeah, fantastic. So things have been really hectic for you over the last few months especially. We're going to touch on all aspects of what you've been doing, but you've got a book coming out, haven't you? Musical Truth.
Indeed.
And that really, I've been reading some of it today, and it really sort of touches on, or it goes into great depth of the sort of causal factors of human suffering while we're there, but also with your background, really going into depth the whole aspect of how we are controlled by music and that sort of thing. So do you just want to let us know sort of your background in terms of your musical background and how you got into that and where it's led to you in fruition with this book?
Yeah, well, I've always been a music guy, and I realized this from about the age of five when I bought my first record, and it was Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, first time it was out. And I remember saving up my pennies and asking my parents to take me down to the local Woolworths. There's a flashback for you. Buy a 7-inch copy of this record, Queen. I saw it on Top of the Pops every week, the video, and it just blew me away. And from that point, I just had a love for pop music. And I spent the rest of my childhood buying records that were in the charts and just being into that whole thing. Mm. And then when I was in my teenage years, I kind of fine-tuned my tastes a bit and got into black dance music, like early hip-hop and soul, funk, early house music, all that sort of thing. Decided I wanted to become a DJ. I don't want to make it sound easy, because it certainly wasn't, but eventually I achieved that. And I went on the path to becoming a radio and club DJ, which I did for, or I still do, for the last 20 odd years. And things reached the point about 6 years ago now, where I started to come to some great understandings of what was really going on in the world, and some great truths that are kept hidden from us. And I realized how this tied in to the corporate music industry, of which I've been a part for many years. And all of this just kind of came together, and I was able to consolidate it in my mind. And I realized that the very best way of putting all this information across to people and communicating this knowledge, wisdom, and understanding that it's so important that people grasp was to put together a book that brought together everything I'd come to understand up to that point. And on the one hand, it goes into the kind of mechanics and all the nuts and bolts of how the corporate music industry is used for mind control purposes on a mass scale, and how it's used for social engineering and to shape the perceptions of people and to get right into their subconscious and plant all these ideas and perceptions without people being aware that it's going on. So I certainly wanted to communicate how that is done. But on the other hand, I also recognize it was a great opportunity to get across some spiritual, metaphysical truths about how the universe works and about how we're a part of it, and how as components and expressions and individuated units of consciousness, we all play our part in the way reality plays out and is shaped. And so I saw an opportunity to bring all those different elements together. And on the surface, people might think that these are two wildly differing worlds, you know, talking about what goes on in the music industry behind the scenes and talking about these universal metaphysical truths and concepts. But I've attempted to show how, in fact, they are all connected. And I've attempted to put a message across that people can take away with them at the end of the book that is hopefully going to resonate and inspire them to have a think about how their thoughts, emotions and actions really affect everything that goes on in this reality, in this world.
Yeah.
And so it's quite an unusual book in that sense, I guess.
Yeah, there's not too many of these ones been published, I wouldn't have thought. So I'm looking forward to getting through the rest of it. But I mean, from my point of view, I've always been interested into music, but it wasn't hard to see going through the last decade that something was awry in terms of what was sort of hitting the mainstream. So I guess from your point of view, being sort of deep within it, it must have been glaringly obvious that there was some kind of control going on behind the scenes in terms of what was being allowed to get out and to hit people's ears, basically.
Yeah, well, it took me a while to catch on, to be honest. I guess you could say I was a slow learner. It wasn't until relatively recently, you know, a few years ago, bearing in mind I've been doing this job for over 25 years now, it wasn't until the tail end of the first decade of the millennium, so around about sort of 2007, 2008, that I started to notice that things weren't quite as they should be and something was going on. And, you know,
I tell you when it hit me, when Victoria Beckham brought out a dance music song back in 2001. I think that's what I thought. It wasn't all it was cracked up to be, but...
Well, no, I mean, it took me until that kind of time period to really start paying attention to what was going on. And you might think it's surprising that somebody could go for that many years just going through the motions and being swept along with the tide of things and not noticing what was really glaringly obvious. But I think this is probably a process that a lot of people listening to this can relate to.
Yeah.
You know, we have a point where we wake up, in inverted commas. And when you do, and when the veil is lifted and you start to see the world for what it really is, and you start to see all the trickery and all the lies and deception that are foisted on us, you wonder how the hell you missed it. You know, talk about being asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
And you can look back at the way you lived your life and, you know, the way you thought about things and the way you probably just swallowed everything that the mainstream evening news told you and everything that governments told you. And you think, how the hell could I have been so naive? How could I have been so easily mugged off? I mean, I could think back to 2001 and when the official narrative of 9/11 was presented to us on the evening news, I'm very ashamed to say that I swallowed it hook, line and sinker.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
You know, I actually went for what I was being told about these Arab terrorists orchestrating the whole thing, directed by Osama bin Laden from a cave in Afghanistan. And you wonder how the hell you could have been so naive. So there's something that happens to all of us that just kind of kickstarts that awakening. And it only happens when it's ready. It happens when it's meant to and not before, clearly.
Exactly.
And so when I did finally wake up, I was able to look back upon the part that I'd played in the music industry through being a DJ for so many years and being out there playing this music weekend in, weekend out throughout several years and playing the stuff on the radio and writing about it in magazines and stuff. And I was able to see how the agenda was unfolding at that time, but how I'd missed it. And so it was pretty much a case of making up for lost time and kind of atoning for what I'd been a part of, really, in a sense, and getting this information out there.
We forgive you, Mark.
Thank you. And just kind of fearlessly putting out there what needs to be put out, saying what needs to be said, not really giving a damn about who might be offended by it, who it might upset, you know, whose Christmas card list I might be struck off. You know, there are things that need to be said, and they're being said in this book, and I'm now putting it out there in a way that I didn't before.
Oh, brilliant. It's got so blatant recently with the people involved with music, people like Miley Cyrus, and you know, these are influencing the next generation, aren't they? So I mean, it's really the videos and things that they're putting out right now look blatantly satanic, even if you're not even aware. So do you think that this is them just is it kind of like a satanic mockery? Are they saying, look how blatant we can be, and still, you know, the masses will just like suck it up? Or is there something a little bit darker? Are they going at it full throttle to really sort of get into people's minds? What's your take on that?
I think it's probably a bit of both. I've come to understand that when these elite controllers, these psychopaths, whatever you want to call them, people will be familiar with the groups we're talking about, whenever they do something, there's always a sort of primary reason for doing it, but there's usually a few subsidiary reasons that also suit the overall agenda. So, you know, they're benefited either way. And I think with the fact that they're being so blatant with all these music videos and stuff, they're putting satanic dark occult imagery into pop videos aimed at kids. You know, there's bloody inverted pentagrams and upside down crosses and the all-seeing eye. And
it was never that blatant before, though, or did I just miss it all?
No, it wasn't. They've stepped up the agenda big time in recent years, putting you know, depictions of Baphomet and you name it. It's all there in Miley Cyrus videos and Kesha videos, Britney Spears videos, Jay-Z videos, all these usual suspects. And I think it's a reflection of two things that you touched on there. One is there is an element of mockery. They do like rubbing our faces in it. They do realize that there's only a few that will properly understand what's being done. And they like to kind of taunt us by more or less saying, yes, we know you lot can see it, but the rest of the masses that this is aimed at are all brainwashed morons, that automatons that are just soaking up all this stuff into their subconscious, and they have no idea of the effect that it's having on them. So what are you going to do about it? But I think more than that, that the primary reason why it's being done is it's a representation of what's going on in the wider world generally, which is they're getting desperate. They realize that there are large numbers of people now that are waking up to truth, that are starting to see the world the way it really is. It's something about these times. It's something about the fact that guys like us are able to communicate this information via the internet and get out to large numbers of people and really alert them to what's going on. They see this process happening and they realize that if it continues at this exponential rate, their days are numbered in terms of still being able to have this control over us. So they're getting desperate, they're panicking, and they're throwing everything they've got at us, everything in the kitchen sink. You know, they're doing it in the wider world. As I say, they're pulling off all these false flag terrorist stunts. They're pulling off all these hoax events using crisis actors to achieve one aspect of their agenda or another. And, you know, they're getting very hardcore in the police state, in bringing in global surveillance, in installing an Orwellian scenario straight out of 1984 in so many parts of the world. And I think what's happening in the entertainment business, particularly the music business, is just a representation of that. They're getting desperate and they're pulling out all the tricks. So they're putting all the dark occult imagery into videos and in stage shows and in promotional photo shoots and all that sort of thing to have this dark energetic effect on the mass subconscious of humanity. But people are getting wise to it. And I draw inspiration from the fact that people are starting to take an interest in this subject area. One of the great things about being able to do this book is that I've seen from my experience that people really do take an interest in popular culture. You might try and have a conversation with somebody about what's going on in the world of politics or, you know, the geopolitical arena or something like that, and you can kind of watch their eyes glaze over and a very bored expression comes across their face and they're looking for the exit door because they just don't get into that sort of stuff. But the minute you start bringing in names like Jay-Z and Kanye West and Beyonce and Rihanna and the Beatles and the Doors, the Rolling Stones and David Bowie, you can watch a spark of interest ignite in their eyes. People then want to know what you've got to say. And if you're linking those kind of names with aspects of what's going on in the world and bringing in aspects of the dark occult and human consciousness and mind control and stuff like that, people really want to know about it. And it's a great way of engaging them and getting them on the path to truth by showing how names such as the ones I've just mentioned are being used as part of the agenda. You know, people love popular culture, and it's being used against us in these methods of mind control that I outline in the book, but it can also be of benefit to those of us trying to communicate great truths by engaging people and sparking their interest.
Exactly. It's not something that I've used too much, to be honest, but I'll add that string to my bow. Definitely any way of getting someone to perk interest is beneficial, and certainly thinking about what you've said, it makes sense that, you know, music is such a big part of most people's lives, to mention those names will perk up the ears, I guess. So
yeah, oh yeah, it's something there's something for everyone, you know. I mean, you could speak to young people today about what Rihanna and Beyonce videos are being used for, but you can speak to somebody of 60, 70 years of age about what was going on with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Elvis Presley. You know, it's a generational thing. And I've had a lot of feedback actually from people in their 60s and 70s that were around in the era of the Beatles and of all these acts that were coming out of Laurel Canyon, the counterculture, anti-establishment hippie kind of movement, call it what you will, at the tail end of the 60s, all that music that was coming out of Los Angeles and San Francisco. And I've had feedback from these guys saying, you've really opened my eyes to that era, and I'm going back 50 years and looking at this scene that I was a part of and looking at it with fresh eyes. You know, they're doing it reluctantly because nobody wants to acknowledge that they were taken in and duped and were being led along as part of a mass mind control agenda earlier in their life. But you know, people do. People are prepared to accept that when they can see the evidence, when all the signs are there. And so, yeah, it's been going on forever in the music industry. It's been going on since day one. So it doesn't matter whether you're 20 years of age, 40 years of age, or 60 years of age, you have been a target of it. And there have been acts and certain scenes and certain genres that have been targeted at your age group along the way. And the agenda ultimately has always been the same. So it's something that anyone could take an interest in if they really want to come to an understanding of how all this stuff has been used against us.
Sure. I've got a bit of cognitive dissonance over what you've just said, because I pretty much know innately that the house music, trance music scene was probably created out of some institute. But I do love the music so much that I don't really want to believe it, but I've read and I've heard things about that scene that indicate that it was, and you know, it's part of it, isn't it? It's part of existing in this paradigm. You know, you sometimes have to dance with the devil in that respect.
Well, it probably is, yeah.
But yeah, it's very interesting that you've had older people come back to you on stuff that was going on in their era. And how do they respond when you start sort of talking? Do you go down the consciousness route with them, or?
Well, I've been able to with some people. I mean, not all the feedback that I've had from older folk has been favourable like that. I've had a lot of objections and a lot of defensive responses from people that have said, first of all, they wonder how a guy that's younger than them can know about what was going on in the 60s when I wasn't around to actually witness it myself. But there is such a thing as research and study and looking into these things. And information is information and truth is truth, and anyone can have access to that if they open themselves up to it. But yeah, I've had a lot of haters saying, you're talking bollocks, mate, you don't know what you're talking about when it comes to the Beatles or the hippie era or whatever. So I suppose that's to be expected, you know. Not all feedback is going to be favorable. Some people say you're talking bollocks with all this stuff in Jay-Z videos, and you know, you don't know what you're talking about there. I would have to argue the case that I do, because I've been a part of the hip-hop scene for the past 20 odd years. That is my genre, that is my generation. And it was difficult for me to come to an acceptance of that. You know, where you've got guys in their 60s and 70s that find it really difficult to accept that the Beatles were in any way manipulated and controlled and were possibly a product of the Tavistock Institute, I found it very difficult to accept that I'd been duped by the likes of Jay-Z. You know, the evidence is blatant and it's so in your face that Jay-Z is a Freemason. That's not even disputed, you know, that's a fact. And the fact that Jay-Z has been part of various secret societies and there's been dark occult symbolism present throughout his videos and his stage shows and stuff. He flashes up dark occult symbols in his concerts. He's worn a sweatshirt with the phrase of Aleister Crowley on it, "Do what thou wilt," from the Book of the Law, you know, and that's just blatant and in your face. And so I had to come to a grudging acceptance of the fact that Jay-Z was not the guy that I thought he was. I was always impressed by his skills as a hip-hop MC. And that would be the reason why he was chosen to be elevated to the very top of the ranks. You know, that's the reason why the controllers wanted this guy on team, because he is talented and he does have incredible skills. And that's what impressed me when he first came out. But I had to accept that ultimately he's not someone that I respect. He's not someone that I look up to anymore, because he's allowed himself to be manipulated and controlled and used as a stooge for a very malevolent agenda. You know, this agenda does not have humanity's best interests at heart. It's serving the few that control it, and it's enslaving and mind controlling everybody else. Why would anyone with their full consciousness and spirituality intact want to be a part of that scene and want to support it in any way? That's why I no longer go out there and play stuff like that, and I no longer put artists like Jay-Z on a pedestal. So it's something I've had to do, you know. Yeah. I've had to let something go, and people will have to do that if they want to properly get on the path to truth.
Exactly. You know? So is it your opinion, because there's different ways of looking at it. Some say that these people are like born into bloodline families and they're groomed for a career in pop, and others say that actually these people are sort of targeted as having talent, and then they actually sign their soul over to the devil. Is it a mixture of the both, or is it?
I think it is. I think it is. I think there's a generational bloodline aspect to it, and that happens throughout the entertainment industry. You get it with a lot of Hollywood actors, and you actually get it with a few television presenters as well, where they come from a long-running bloodline, and they're groomed for celebrity from birth. You know, it's always on the cards that they will have a life in the public spotlight. And so some of them are ushered into the TV industry, some of them are ushered into being actors, some of them are ushered into being pop stars. The idea is always that they're in the public eye, that they become famous, and that they become somebody that people look up to and follow and pay attention to. And there comes a point where, you know, they're led down the path of this subversive agenda, and they're required to start doing certain work for those that control them. So there's the generational bloodline aspect to it, where people are born into those kind of families. You know, it's suggested that Britney Spears comes from, you know, a long-standing bloodline like that. It's been suggested that Miley Cyrus is the same way, and there'll be other names as well. But then there are other acts that I think just show potential, and they show talent, and they show great skill as they're coming up through the game. And this is spotted by those that control the industry, and so these artists are taken aside, made an offer they can't refuse, so to speak, and they're co-opted into the agenda. And I've made the point many times that this happens within the hip-hop scene, because a lot of hip-hop artists, Jay-Z would be a good example, Notorious B.I.G. would be another, there are many others. You know, these guys grow up in the ghetto. They grow up in absolute poverty, where the only prospects ordinarily facing them in life are to become drug dealers, or you know, criminals of some other kind, or maybe join the military, or not a whole lot else, to be honest, because there aren't that many prospects in the projects of Brooklyn and the Bronx and Compton and South Central LA and all these places.
So they always bite their hands off when they come up with this offer. Absolutely.
So if some record company exec pulls up in a shiny Jag one day into your projects and comes up to you and says, "We've noticed that you've got great skill and talent, and we want to give you a multi-million dollar record deal, and we're going to make a star of you, and you're going to be able to buy mansions and yachts and buy your mum a house out in the suburbs somewhere and get her out of the ghetto. All you got to do is sign on the dotted line." If you don't know any better, why would anyone say no to that?
Exactly.
And so this is the way they get a lot of these guys on team. They offer them all this fame and fortune and wild riches beyond their dreams, and they're only too happy to take it. They do bite the hand off. And it's only after they've signed on the dotted line that they realize the nature of the deal that they've just made, and they realize the true nature of the industry that they've just been inducted into. And it's at that point that they're required to start doing their real work for those that now control them. So that's another way that they get people on side. You know, they spot this great talent, they spot this hunger in people to make it big, and they tap into it and exploit it. And before you know, these artists are on the same path as so many others, and they're putting all these symbols into their videos, and they're putting them together with other artists at stage shows, and they're taking part in all these mass occult rituals, things like the Grammys and the Super Bowl and all the rest of it, and they've got them.
Yeah. Can I ask you about Eminem? Because he's a guy that I from my brief research on him, he looks like he sold his soul. But then it sounds like through his music he kind of regrets it and is trying to like fight back through some of his music. Is that the sort of take you would take on that?
Pretty much so, yeah. I mean, he's definitely a troubled soul and, you know, a very lost soul, unfortunately. And he's a good example of what I've just spoken about, that same process of they pluck you out of the ghetto. They give you opportunities that you would never have ordinarily, tapping into your skills and talent. And that's exactly what they did with Eminem, taking him out of the trailer parks of Detroit, you know, and putting him on the path to success. And straight away, they put him on as part of this agenda to kind of subvert and corrupt the minds of people listening to his music. And isn't it incredible that when he first came out, his music was absolutely shocking, because he was talking about murder and rape and mutilation and killing his baby mother and, you know, irresponsible use of drugs and every depraved kind of activity you can think of was there in the lyrics of his first album. And I lapped it up at the time. I thought it was incredible. I thought it was great. That's what kind of a low degraded state of consciousness I was in back in 1998 when his first album came out. I loved all that stuff, and so did many other people. But it was shocking, and it made headlines, and it outraged parents. And quite rightly so, looking at it in retrospect from a mature frame of mind. You know, that stuff was just outrageous, and it was aimed at kids. But a couple of years down the line, Eminem had put out many records talking about rape and murder and mutilation and all the rest of it. And by about 2 years later, it had been normalized, you know. And people would say, oh, here's Eminem again. He's such a card, you know. He's such a colorful character. He's talking about raping people and, you know, slitting the throat of his baby mother in front of his daughter. And, oh, my God, what is he like, eh? You know, and it had been normalized by that point. And you could take it forward a couple of years from that, and people were starting to get bored with it. Oh, here he is talking about murder again. Oh, you know, he should talking about making a deal with the devil and being into Satanism and stuff. He really should, you know, step it up now. This stuff's starting to get boring. So that's how they just normalize stuff. It's shocking to start with, but the more you hear of it, the more it just becomes the norm and it becomes acceptable. And then people are looking for the next way to be shocked and the next way to be outraged. So that's an incredible thing that they achieved with him. But yeah, throughout his music, he's hinted at having made a deal with the devil. He's put out some very dark tracks, which leave very little to the imagination. Yeah. And he's talking about having sold his soul and gone over to the dark side and having done all this in exchange for the fame and fortune that he's achieved. They put him together with Dr. Dre, who's another artist and producer that's done just that. Dr. Dre's music and whole persona has been very dark in recent years and very satanic. He's got the Beats by Dre range of headphones. Yeah. And, you know, you see the 666 thing.
Everyone's got a pair, of course.
Yeah, because it's cool to have them, and, you know, all the fashionistas want to be a part of it. They've just fallen for the marketing. But there's 666 bloody imagery throughout the advertising for that range. You know, they pass it off as a B for Beats, but it's actually an expression of the 666 that we see everywhere. And so Dr. Dre is a big part of this dark agenda, and he was put together with Eminem, as was Snoop Dogg before him. And then 50 Cent was brought into that whole shady aftermath kind of empire. He was another one that was sent down that route, although not as blatantly as Eminem. And Eminem, over the years, as you say, has kind of hinted his great regret of what he'd become a part of. It's almost as if he came to realize the true nature of this dark agenda that he'd been co-opted into, and he realized that he'd sold his soul. And he has hinted at various points that he's wanted to get out of that and he's wanted to be free of it. There was a point where he went off the scene for several years, towards the end of the 2000s, and we heard nothing from him for quite some time. And we got the story through the news headlines that he was addicted to sleeping pills, and he'd been depressed, and he'd lost weight, and he'd been very ill, and he was not in a good place at all, you know, physically or spiritually. And then he came back, and he started making more music that was talking about murder, rape, and mayhem, and mutilation, and more music that was talking about selling a soul to the devil, and more music that was very dark and occultic in nature. And so it just gives the impression that once you're in, you're in. There's no way out. They've got you. They've got you for life. And when they instruct you to start making songs about certain things, you've got no choice. And if you do try and resist, and you do try and get out, they'll either do a number on you, like they've done with the likes of Lauryn Hill, where they stitched her up with a massive tax bill of about $1 million. You know, who really believes that that's something that just happens?
Yeah.
And that it wasn't something that was done to try and discredit her, give her a warning.
She was very outspoken, wasn't she?
She's been very outspoken about the industry. She's tried to break free of her contract with Sony. She's tried to regain her sovereignty and her independence, and they slapped that massive tax bill on her as a way of saying, get back in line, remember we own you, you don't get out that easily. They've done the same thing with DMX. DMX has been in and out of jail and in and out of court on some trumped up charge or another in recent years, because he came out with a track called The Industry a few years ago, where he laid out the true nature of the music industry and how artists are so beholden to it. And they don't like it when artists do that. You know, they come after you, and they either give you a little warning to get back in line, like they've done with Eminem and DMX and Lauryn Hill, or in very extreme cases like Michael Jackson, who's another artist who's been very outspoken about the industry, and Sony in particular. We know the rest.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about him. He was blatant, wasn't it? He'd signed up and was trying to expose them, and they didn't like it. That's the way I see it anyway.
Well, yeah. Yeah, Michael was a lifelong victim of the industry. There's a image that I use in my public talks of him holding up the fingers in the form of the six, which is a depiction again of the 666 that these trollers like to flash around so much. You know, Michael Jackson's a young kid, he's 8 or 10 years old, and there he is doing it. Obviously he's been instructed to do it. I think his father just kind of sold him into the industry to make a quick buck. Not a very pleasant character, Michael Jackson's father, Joe. You know, he sold all his kids into the industry because he wanted to be kind of rich and famous himself through his kids, but he lacked the talent in his own right. So he just kind of put his own kids into this boot camp regime where they would become child performers and become famous and be a part of the entertainment industry. And Michael was obviously put into that at an early age. And there's strong hints in some of the artwork and some of the drawings that Michael did that he was a victim of trauma-based mind control, which is another aspect of the entertainment industry that's absolutely everywhere and absolutely rife when you know where to look for it. And they place very blatant symbolism pertaining to trauma-based mind control everywhere. But there's strong evidence to suggest that Michael Jackson was a part of that. But there's also evidence to suggest that late in his life, he started to break free of that programming. And he started to actually regain some of his consciousness and some of his humanity. And this can be seen through some of the public comments that he made when he went up there at this Al Sharpton rally, this event a few years ago. And he took to the stage and he started publicly slating the Sony Corporation. And he was very blatant in talking about how they exploited their artists, and how the artists were absolutely enslaved to them, and how the artists were ripped off by Sony financially and just completely controlled by them. And he had some words to say about Tommy Mottola, who was the former CEO of Sony, and he described him as the devil. And you're not going to make a public comment like that without there being a price to pay for it. And so we had a situation with Michael Jackson where he was hit with these two legal cases involving him allegedly sexually abusing these kids. You know, there was the one case.
Sorry to interject. It makes you wonder whether or not any of that was even true.
Well, it does.
you know,
It does.
before I became aware, I always thought, well, he does put himself in some strange situations. But then when you realize how much the media manipulate and control everything, and if they want to put something out about someone, that person hasn't got any kind of control over it. So it just makes
you... Yeah. And I fell for that one, you know, in the same way that I fell for the official story of 9/11. I remember when that first case came out and it was alleged that Michael Jackson had been abusing kids. I fell for it. And I was thinking, oh, God, you know, Michael Jackson's not the guy I thought he was. You know, what a disgusting individual. How can he be into this stuff? But the more I studied in later years and the more I came to realize the true nature of the industry, the more I came to understand that that's a classic way of discrediting somebody that's got a little too close to the truth.
Of course.
And is saying comments publicly that the industry would rather weren't said. So they tried to slap that first case on him, and he was vindicated in that. And then a few years later, another case comes out where there's a whole slew of fresh allegations against him, suggesting that he's been sexually abusing kids. And so they tried to slap that one on him. And I think that was his warning to, you know, watch what you say, get back on track, get back with the programming, or watch what happens to you.
Exactly.
And of course, he was eventually vindicated in that second case as well, but his reputation had been harmed because there were lots of people that had fallen for the suggestion that he was a kiddie fiddler, you know, and that kind of stayed with him in the minds of many people. So his fresh, family, wholesome kind of image had been tainted in the minds of so many. And it's a classic example of what they do to you. And then in the end, I think he became just so much of a loose cannon and so much of a potential liability with the comments that he was making. And he was putting it into his music as well. He was making records like They Don't Care About Us and Leave Me Alone and many other records where he was talking about what really goes on and, you know, history. He was talking about the manipulation and falsification of history, where the version that we're taught in schools and through academia is not the real version of what actually went on. You know, you don't get to make comments like that when you're a celebrity and a superstar without there being a price to pay. And on the 25th of June 2009, I would suggest he paid the price.
Yeah, I would agree, and that's why we have to fight on in his honor, I guess, and make sure that his life wasn't in vain, and we try and bring as much of this to the awareness of the masses as we can.
Yeah.
So thanks for that, Mark. I think what I want to touch on now is, I mean, you've given some great outlines about your knowledge about the music industry there, but I just want to touch on some sort of deeper esoterical things, solution-based ideas that you have in your book, which are fantastic and absolutely vital. So you talk about free will and that it's us consenting to a lot of this stuff. Do you just want to touch on that a bit for us?
Yeah, everything that's being done to us through predictive programming, which I get into big time in the book, how that all works, that's done through movies and TV shows and music videos. Everything that's being done through occult symbolism in videos, people might see all these pyramids and all seeing eyes and snakes and depictions of Baphomet and 666 everywhere in music videos, and they might say, well, yeah, I can see it's being done, but why is it being done? And people might look at the stage shows that you get at the Grammys and the Super Bowl and things like that, with Madonna doing absolutely blatant satanic rituals right in front of your very eyes, and Katy Perry doing the same thing a couple of years ago, and they might say, well, you know, why is it being done? And it all boils down to the same thing, which is the hijacking of our free will and our consent. This ties very much into natural law, which you get into yourself, Tony, big time, and I know you'll understand all this, and people that look at your work will have some understanding of it as well. It ties into the fact that we are all individuated units of universal consciousness. We're all aspects of the divine, aspects of creation. And we are here to live out certain experiences and to gain certain knowledge and learn certain lessons during our time here on Earth. It all ties into the golden rule of natural law, which can be expressed as do no harm. You know, if there's only one law that people ever live their lives by, that would be the one. It can be expanded to do not treat others in a way you would not wish to be treated yourself. And that is the key to the way in which we are supposed to live our lives. It's the moral code of the universe, of creation. And it's inherently woven into the fabric of this reality in which we find ourselves. And if we had a situation where everyone on Earth understood that basic golden rule and applied that to their thoughts, emotions, and actions, and the way that they interact with other people, then all the problems that we face in this world, all the mayhem and destruction and chaos and violence and conflict would disappear overnight, because that's all you need to know and that's all you need to apply to your life, that one golden rule. But unfortunately, humanity has demonstrated throughout the ages that it's incapable of understanding that basic rule and applying it to their lives. And that's why we have all the chaos and mayhem and destruction in this world. And until people do align themselves with an understanding of that, expect more of the same. It's not going to get any better. But the free will, consciousness, and consent thing is very much tied in with that. And the dark occult controllers that we have, who are running the entertainment industry and pretty much every other aspect of human life as well, they understand the way natural law works, and they understand that we're all bound by it. But they seem to think, in their psychopathic, egoic, satanic mindset, that they can cheat it and that they can find a way out of the karmic consequences that come down on them by putting the emphasis and the onus on us, the masses. And they seem to think that they can achieve this by basically letting us know what they're doing, putting it there in plain sight, giving us the opportunity to understand what's being done to us and how we're being mind controlled and how our subconscious minds are being hijacked. So they do this by way of all these symbols that they put out in their work. They do this by all the depictions of predictive programming that they do. So every time they want to pull off some false flag terror event or some other hoax stunt, they place a depiction of it in some movie or a pop video or a TV show or something sometime before. And it's giving people the opportunity to understand what's about to happen, to understand the intentions that have been stated. It is pretty much impossible for anyone to gain a full understanding of, you know, what's being represented here, I would suggest, because they do it in deeply encoded form. And sometimes they do it in the form of numerology, they do it in the form of very esoteric symbolism, and no one reasonably could be expected to understand what's being conveyed.
But if they actually think that that does let them off the hook, because they're so subtle, aren't they? Some of the yeah. things that they put in are so, if you've not looked into any of this stuff, you would have no idea. And I just wonder that whether they must actually believe that does let them off the hook.
Well, I think they do, and I think the key to why they believe that is that they are mentally ill. And I'm not saying that in any kind of flippant way. They are mentally ill. They are possessed of a psychopathic mindset. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to do the things that they do. They wouldn't be able to kill innocent people and, you know, enslave people and destroy their homelands and murder women and children. You know, ordinary people with their humanity intact are not capable of doing that. You know, even the brainwashed masses that watch The X Factor and eat McDonald's and show absolutely no sign of having woken up and being in tune with their full consciousness in any way. People like that would not be capable of murdering innocent women and children and, you know, committing all these acts of mayhem, because we're just not built that way. When you've got your humanity intact, you're not capable of doing stuff like that, because we have empathy. and compassion is a part of us. But I think these individuals that we're talking about are so psychopathic and have been indoctrinated into satanic ways of thinking from birth that they just don't have these elements in their humanity. They don't have empathy, they don't have compassion, they don't even realize probably that there's anything wrong with what they're doing. It's just completely normal to them. And because they're psychopathic and satanic and mentally ill, I think they really do believe that it's possible for them to get off the hook karmically for the stuff that they do, the fuckeries that they commit. They recognize that the universe works in this way. They recognize that there is judgment and there are consequences for the actions that we choose to take. But I really do think that they believe that by putting the emphasis on us, placing their intentions in plain sight, and so that when we don't object to it and when we don't say, hang on a minute, you can't do that, we're not having it, they think that we're in effect saying that we're okay with it, that we consent, we don't object, and it's okay for you to go right ahead and do it. I think they are so self-obsessed and so steeped in ego that you know, they really do believe that they're godlike. They really do believe that they have dominion over the rest of us, that they're special, that they are the elites. But I also think they're terrified of dying. They're terrified of leaving this reality, and they're terrified of what lies beyond, you know, when you get right down to it. Why do these psychopathic elites go to such lengths to keep themselves alive for so long? You know, you look at some of the key players. We've got Prince Philip, Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, George H.W. Bush, Rupert Murdoch. You know, these guys are all in their 90s, or if they're not in their 90s, they're close to it. You've got Jacob Rothschild, who's, you know, getting into his 80s. You've got, who else? I mean, there's any number of George Soros, you know. And then you've got David Rockefeller, who is 101 years of age this year.
How many heart operations has that one had?
Yeah, yeah. How many blood transfusions and organ transplants has he had? And you know that these elites, I mean, the Queen, you could put the Queen into it. She's nearly 90. You know that these individuals are not eating the same crap food as us. They're not exposed to the same electromagnetic and chemical pollution as us. They've probably got bloody organite devices all over their palaces to dispel the effects of chemtrails.
I can just imagine the Queen with a chem buster in her back garden.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, these people never get cancer. You never hear of it. The Queen Mother lived to, what was she, 102 years old. And they keep themselves alive all this time because I think what it boils down to is that they're just terrified of what lies beyond, because there's got to be a recognition deep down of the fact that they're doing wrong. Otherwise, why would they hide their activities, you know, hide their true agendas from us? And why would they feel the need for all the lies and the deception and the coercion and the manipulation of our consent and getting us to agree to our own slavery in these unspoken ways? You know, I think they understand natural law. They understand that you should not do harm to others.
And they don't like natural law, do they?
They hate it.
They hate the fact that we're bound by our behaviour. Yes. And I think part of it, and you'll probably know this, Mark, is that they rebel against it. And that's why their motto is do as thou wilt. They just sticking a middle finger up to universal law, and you can only do that for a certain amount of time, can't you?
Yeah. They hate the fact that we're bound by it, but there's a grudging acceptance on their part that we are, you know, and this is part of their understanding. And I think that when all these individuals exit this reality and leave their bodies and go back to source, they've got a lot of karmic payback waiting for them. And wouldn't want to be them. You know, it's said that when we leave our bodies, we get a kind of life review. There have been spiritual mediums and past life regressionists and people that have had near-death experiences that have said that when you leave this reality, you kind of have your whole life flash before you. Yeah. And people talk about this in things like ayahuasca ceremonies as well, when you are able to access higher consciousness through DMT and things like that. You're able to look back at the way you've lived your life and you see it from the perspective of the universe. You see it from the perspective of others who you've affected in your life, and you get to see how your thoughts, emotions, and behaviors in life have impacted and affected others. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be somebody like George H.W. Bush when I get my life review. I can't imagine that's going to be a whole lot of fun.
No, I wouldn't want to sit through that one, personally.
No. Talk about a horror movie.
God, yeah. I mean, I don't know. So I think we're pretty much on the same page in terms of what we see as the ultimate solution, and it is quite simple. The universe doesn't make things difficult, and that is really just to live in harmony with natural law. Do no harm, cause no loss to others, but don't take no shit. And that's basically, if we all, like you say, if we all abided by that, it's not there to sort of hold us back, it's there just to help us grow. It's sort of urging us to evolve, isn't it? That's the way I look at it.
It is. That's the answer. It's the only answer, and it's actually very, very simple, and it's available to us at any time, as long as we want it enough in our mass numbers. You know, just a few individuals here and there is not going to change anything. We need large numbers of people to get on the same page. And as you say, everyone benefits. You know, if everyone would get on track with natural law, with an understanding of it, you know, it's called many different things. It's called universal law and karmic law and cause and effect, consequentialism. The concept is always the same, whatever name you put on it. And it's an understanding that's been there since the beginning of humanity, basically. You know, it's written about in so many ancient texts. It's actually the basis of all the major world religions before all the rules and regulations and the dogma was added to it, and all the holy books were written as you know, guidebooks for things that you're supposed to do and rituals you're supposed to undergo. At the root of it all lies an understanding of the fact that we're all bound by you know, this law. And if you do get on track with it and you align yourself with it, and you modify your thoughts, emotions, and actions all in balance with each other and all with this same goal in mind, then the universe gets on your side and you find yourself guided and you find yourself able to intuit great knowledge as to what needs to be done. People say all the time, we recognize that the world is fucked up. We can see all the stuff that's being done to us, but what do we do about it? How do we get out of it? It's a very valid question. And you could spend days examining the fine detail of what we're supposed to do to dismantle the banking system, what we do to get rid of all these corrupt governments, what we do to, you know, clean up the environment and get rid of all these pollutants that we've got everywhere. But ultimately, if you align yourself with natural law and you get in tune with the universe and everybody's on the same page with each other in having all these aspects of their consciousness aligned, the answers come to you and you know what to do. You know that the wisdom and the knowledge and the understanding is conveyed to you, and so solutions will present themselves. You know, there's fine detail to all these solutions that we could get into, and obviously activism is required. People need to roll up their sleeves and get busy and get stuck in and do certain work that needs to be done. It's not just going to happen magically by people thinking nice thoughts.
Which is a big part of natural law as well. It's not only just do no harm, cause no loss. It's living, once you're aware of truth, and you mention this in your book, it's then what are you doing with that? It's not your knowledge to hold on to. You know, that then needs to be expressed, and then, as you say, the universe will come to your aid, and the universe loves courage, and I feel very protected myself from the universe, and yeah, if we all lived that way, then we could have anything we wanted in on this planet, as you
say.
That's right.
And it's thoughts, emotions, and actions. And the last one is very important, you know, because it does require action. But like I say, you know, the answers are given to you and guidance is given to you. And we can have a better situation for everyone anytime we want it. It's a case of, first of all, you do have to understand the methods of what's being done to you. And I know you get into this a lot yourself, Tony. You talk about the new age mindset, which is where people say that if you just think positive thoughts, exactly. You know, if you meditate and you think nice thoughts, then all the negative stuff will go away and you don't have to pay attention to Satanism and you don't have to pay attention to ritual abuse and pedophilia and all this horrible stuff that's going on. Just think nice thoughts and you can think the world better. Doesn't work that way. Sorry, that's a cop-out. That's the easy option. It's an aspect of it, yes. You've got to raise your consciousness and you've got to apply your will to the sort of scenario you want. You project your will out into the universe and you know, that definitely has a bearing on things. But you don't get off the hook when it comes to action being required. You might be required to let some things go in your life. You might be required to modify your behaviors. You might have to change your job. You might have to let go of certain people in your life. You might have to, you know, undergo certain changes in order to make these things happen.
I agree with that. Sorry.
Yeah. That's all part of the process.
Exactly. I often think that when if I post something or talk about something to do with like political corruptness, or you know, the chemtrails they're spraying, or the food, the poison of the food, you get a lot more interest. But when you actually talk about, or what I've found is, when you're actually talking or you post something about natural law, which is the only real solution, and everyone's saying they're looking for a solution, when you put something out about natural law, we have to change our behavior, you get very little interest come back. And yep. I find it's because people, they want to talk about the movie, but when it comes to changing themselves, it's a different ball game. And I think that's where the leap has to be made. We have to understand that natural law is in existence, that we are bound by it, and then, as you rightly say, we have to align with natural law, which means losing, like you say, losing friends, possibly giving up certain things that you liked before, changing jobs. And that is where the crux of it is. How much, and you say in your book, how much do we want it? And I think it boils down to that question. How much do people want it? Do we want to talk about change, or do we want to be the change and express that and move in line with natural law? So I think you're completely bang on point with that one.
Yeah. You might have to make some changes. And I understand that it's difficult. You know, people don't want to make these changes, particularly if it involves maybe not being with a certain partner anymore, or letting go of a certain circle of friends, or maybe falling out with a family member that you know you're not going to talk to anymore. People's circumstances will be different, but you either go with it or you don't. You either want truth and you want a better deal for everyone in this world, or you don't. And certain changes will be required for different people. I've made the change recently to being vegan. I've only just achieved it. I've wanted to do it for many years. I've been vegetarian for 27 years, didn't find that a problem at all. But letting go of the dairy was a big deal for me. And I decided a couple of years ago that I wanted to do that, and I was able to lose the milk and lose the eggs, no problem. But I had a problem with cheese. I love cheese and I travel a lot, and often you can only get a pizza or a cheese sandwich or something when you're on the move, and I struggled with cheese. But recently, you know, I've really, really wanted to just go the whole hog and just cut out that last thing that was holding me back. And you know, I'm on the path to doing that now, and I've not eaten any cheese for a few weeks, and it was very, very difficult, and it's affected my lifestyle in certain ways, and it's caused me to have to let go of something that I really enjoyed before and that was a big part of my behaviors. But you know, I wanted it. I'm someone that is talking about natural law in the public domain and trying to get people on board with it. And so when you do that, you have to be the example. You have to, you know, live what you're preaching. Otherwise, it makes you a hypocrite. Absolutely. And so it's something I've had to do. And so I recognize how difficult it is. And I know it's a hardship, but like I say, you either want it enough or you don't. And just to bring the whole thing back around to the music industry stuff, you know, I've started talking about natural law and consent and all of that. It's basically a case of, once you understand what's being done to us and how the mind control works, you have the free will to no longer consent to it and no longer cooperate with it. Once you understand the way the magician does his tricks, you no longer have to fall for the same tricks. You can just pull yourself away from it and not be a part of it and not cooperate with it in any way. And that's what I'm advising for people that come to understand how all this symbolism is being used, and they come to understand how all these artists are being puppeteered and manipulated and being used to push certain agendas. When you realize the methods that are being used, then you no longer are tricked by it. You're no longer empowering it by giving it your attention. And when large numbers of people do that and make the conscious decision to withdraw from it, then the old tricks aren't going to work anymore, and the magic no longer has its effect. So it's all about free will. It's all about consent. You know, it's the most amazing gift. It's the most incredible gift that we have in human form, is our ability to choose to consent or not, and to choose to apply our free will consciousness. Every time we decide to do anything in our daily lives, it's down to us, ourselves, and the free will choice that we've made. It could have gone either way. We could have chosen route A or route B. Whichever one we go down is the result of the conscious choice that we've made. And so when we make those choices all the time, we can change those choices all the time. We have the opportunity to do that. The power lies with us, each individual. And when you pool large numbers of individuals, each making these choices for themselves, and you know they're all kind of on the same page and operating to the same degree of consciousness, the effect that then goes out there into the macrocosmic universe is absolutely intense. And it really does have the power to change the world and change the experience that we're all having here. You just got to understand it and make that free will decision to, you know, get on the right path. Hope that makes sense.
Absolutely, Mark. 100% with you on all that. We'll wrap this up now. Let me. So you've got a few things coming up. Can you just tell? I know you're speaking at Free Your Mind as well, which is the second year running for you, which is fantastic. There's a great lineup there. That's Mark Passio's event. He's got great speakers. So if you just want to speak, let us know about that, where we can get your book, how we can contact you, what other sites that you're on, and where people can find your work.
Yep. So the book is called Musical Truth. There's some information about it at musicaltruthbook.com. And you can order copies there direct from me myself, pretty much if you're in the UK. It gets a bit complicated with people outside of the UK with shipping costs and all that sort of thing. So anyone outside of the UK that wants to order a copy of the book, I would advise you to do that via Amazon. It's available via Amazon. I know not everyone likes Amazon with some of their skullduggery, but it is still the best way to get hold of books. And so if you just put Mark Devlin Musical Truth into an Amazon search, you'll find it there. Anyone in the UK, if you want to order a copy from me direct, I'm happy to sign a copy of the book, and I'm happy to mail it out to you myself. And if you do it that way, we cut Amazon out of the equation, and we cut out any middlemen and corporate fees and stuff like that. And I get the royalties for the book, which enables me to fund my future work. So, you know, everyone wins that way. So you can drop me an email. My email address is mark@markdevlin.co.uk. And I'm handling sales via PayPal that way. And once again, all the information is at musicaltruthbook.com. The book itself is quite a heavy read. It's 170,000 words, 500 odd pages, and it goes into over 20 chapters, much of the detail of how the music industry is being used, you know, for these dark agendas. And so I take it right back to the music of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, talking about the occult aspects of those two particular groups. There's a section on the psychedelic LSD era of the late 60s and all the music that was coming out of California, and all the links to the military intelligence complex and the links to secret societies and intelligence services and stuff. I'm talking about the transhumanist agenda and how music is playing its role in getting that whole thing out there into the public consciousness. I talk about mind-controlled artists, trauma-based mind control, MK Ultra, monic programming and such, and which artists show all the signs of being under that. Talking about predictive programming, the way that all works, the manipulation of consent again, all the dark occult symbolism that goes into music videos, all these funny hand signals that many of your favorite artists seem to feel the need to flash up. Aleister Crowley crops up time and time again. He's like a bloody rock star in his own right. The amount of acts that have been influenced by Aleister Crowley and that reference his work and all the stuff that he did through his various occult secret societies are absolutely woven into the story of the music industry on both sides of the Atlantic. It's absolutely incredible how much Crowley crops up. And what else is in there? The systematic degeneration of hip-hop culture, which is pretty much my pet subject. Anyone who has observed with great disturbance what has actually happened to so-called hip-hop over the past 20 years or so will want to get inside that chapter. I'm just talking about the way that whole culture and that whole movement has been subverted and sent down a certain path, and how it's just become an absolute mockery of what it used to be, with the likes of Lil Wayne and Nicki Minaj and all these other unbelievable characters that are now populating that scene. So that's one that people might want to get into. Basically, there's a whole world of stuff in the book. And as you mentioned, Tony, there's three chapters basically talking about how all of this ties into natural law, an understanding of the way the universe works, and an understanding of where the solutions lie, which is with us and only with us. And only when we all want it enough does anything change. So I really want to get that understanding across to people. So I'm doing a speaking tour to launch the book and promote it. I've got a fair few dates in the UK. Most of them, I have to say, are up north, places like Hull and Manchester and Liverpool. I wish there were a few more dates down south. It does seem to be the case that most truth groups and meetup groups to explore consciousness and stuff are in the north.
It's worrying when you consider that the actual centre of the whole Satanist agenda is in London. you can't find the group down there.
And I put a post on Facebook the other day to say I'm doing all these talks to launch the book, and I'd love to do one in London. Does anyone know of any meetup groups in London that get into alternative truth type stuff? And the response was a great big piece of tumbleweed blowing across the plain.
Oh,
you know, so that speaks volumes, as you say, that London is the epicenter of all this bloody dark occult stuff that's being done, and yet there don't appear to be any groups, or certainly not that have presented themselves to me, that are offering the solutions and, you know, the alternative to it. But I'm doing a couple of conferences. As you've mentioned, I'm going to be at Free Your Mind 4, which is just outside Philadelphia, and that's the 15th to the 17th of April. Greatly looking forward to getting back to that. It's an awesome event. There's some incredible speakers on the agenda this year. Mark Passio, of course, there's Max Egan this year, Jordan Maxwell, there's Jim Mars, there's Mary Shawn Young, who is a Hollywood actress. She was in Blade Runner, and she's become a whistleblower, talking about what goes on in Hollywood, all the MK Ultra mind control, and, you know, it's going to be fascinating to hear an insider breaking down all that stuff at Free Your Mind 4. So that's just amazing. So anyone that can make that in April, you can get your tickets at freeyourmindconference.com. And back in the UK, I'm doing the Glastonbury Symposium at the end of July, which is also a fantastic event, 3 days over a weekend. And just looking to get out there as widely as possible with it.
Brilliant, Mark. Well, it's been absolutely fascinating as normal. And guys, check out Mark's book. It's a fantastic read, as I say. I've already done a couple of chapters, and I wish you all the best for your tour this year. And we will speak again, Mark.
Thanks a lot, brother. And if you hear of anywhere in Asia, I'd like to get out there. But there is the small problem of airfares. Yeah, but I just want to say, I just want to send some respect back to you for what you're doing. I know you've just started this podcast series. And so I wish you all the best with that. It's a great way of getting the information out. I know you do your YouTube videos, and I know that you've expressed your intent to write a book as well. And, you know, you're just one guy out there that's really doing the work and walking the talk and doing what needs to be done. And I certainly respect everything that you do. So, you know, back at you, Tony.
Thanks a lot, Mark. I'll speak to you very soon.
All right, man. Thank you.
Bye.